and we do have a quorum, so I'd like to start by acknowledging the Quandamooka people, who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we gather this morning. I'd also like to pay respect to their elders past and present, and extend that respect to any Indigenous Australians who may be present this morning. This is a bit of housekeeping for particularly our members of the public in the gallery. In the event of an evacuation, I'd ask that you please remain calm. Follow my directions. The emergency exit is through the gallery doors here on your left and down the stairwell onto Bloomfield Street. Public conduct at a meeting, as is stipulated in section 32 of our standing orders. All members of the public present at a meeting must not, without the prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recordings or take any photographs. Remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way. Not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any persons present. We ask you to be suitably dressed, turn all mobile devices to silent mode, and leave the meeting to take any calls. I have a responsibility as chairperson to warn a member of public present at the meeting who's not complying with any or all of these requirements that I may, with or without such warning, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for such a period as determined by the chair, and that may include future meetings. Haven't been advised of any leaves of absence this morning, so we'll go straight to our devotional segment, and it's great pleasure that I invite Reverend Bob Possingham from Seventh-day Adventist Church to lead us. So this is Bob's first time, but he's very much part of the DNA of our Christian community here in Redlands. So over to you, Bob, to for our devotional segment this morning. Thank you, Reverend. Thank you very much. One instruction I didn't give you. Sorry.
That's what I like about modern communications. They never work. But I've been a resident of Redlands for 23 years now. Love it. Wouldn't go anywhere else. And I say that sincerely. We were living in Cleveland, Coringa Avenue, Fitzroy Street corner. And now we're down in the Adventist Retirement Village the last 18 months. When I retired to the village, Noreen and I decided we'd buy a new car. She got red because they go faster. I got the red because it seems to keep itself clean. You don't have to watch so much. But when we picked it up, the salesman said to us, "Bob, in the glove box there's a manufacturer's instruction book. If you follow that, it will last you out." Well, I didn't know what he meant by that. I hope he meant another 20 years or so, but I wasn't sure. But, it is true, if we follow the manufacturer's instructions, we generally get a pretty good run, don't we? Now and again we get a lemon, but we get a pretty good run. And this morning I just wanted to take something from our manufacturer's booklet that will give us something to help us to enjoy today. It's a text taken out of the book of Micah, the 6th chapter and the 8th verse. And it simply says this: "He has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? But to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." I find that a challenge every morning. But I find if we do our best to live by those principles, that the days go well and other people are helped as well, because that kind of life flows on to others, doesn't it, and blesses other people. So as you go about your activities and the important work that you have today, I hope that this text will be a challenge to you as it is to me every morning. And to that end, I'd like to offer a prayer for us this morning. Simply says, "O God, may this day your Holy Spirit guide the minds of these chosen ones to make wise decisions on behalf of those they serve in this city. May they look to you to find wisdom and guidance. Keep them humble as they serve you. And may the people of this community know that they have met you. And I ask these things in the beautiful name of our Saviour Jesus." May God bless you today as you go about your responsibilities.
Thank you. Next item, councillors, is just a reminder of your declaration of material personal interest or conflict of interest on any items business that we may discuss this morning. You're reminded of your responsibilities in relation to a councillor's material personal interest and conflict of interest according to Division 5A of the Local Government Act 2009. There's details of these responsibilities outlined in your agenda. I'd also like to remind you that you can make those declarations at any time throughout the meeting. Our next item is recognition, and I do know that there are a couple of people that would like to recognise a very important person of our community that unfortunately lost her life last week while in Turkey. I'm referring to Jenny Clapham. For those of you who have been involved in the Minister's Fellowship with the Easter Festival, or frankly anything to do with our Christian community, would know Jenny Clapham well. Certainly a bright face to welcome you wherever you may see her, and has had an incredible impact on people that she has touched in her life. She was doing what she loved doing over in Turkey on missionary work, and unfortunately took ill very quickly, was sent to a university hospital and passed away not long after. We've certainly sent our condolences to all her family, but I think the city will grieve with her whole family, as she has been such an important figure as far as all of those events that I've already mentioned, and just as a really outstanding human being. So on behalf of the community and all of council, I certainly read the news with a very heavy heart. She was the sort of person that would ask about your children by name every time she saw you. So she had incredible talent and an incredible gift and an incredible amount of love and compassion that she shared with everybody, not just anybody, but everybody. So I know I will be missing her face, her spirit, as we go through this year and those events that we go through every year, and I'm sure that pain is felt by a lot of other people, particularly her family. And I know that there are a couple of other councillors who would like to mention Jenny Clapham, so I'll open up the floor. So I think, Councillor Boglari, you mentioned that you'd like to recognise Jenny as well.
Oh, thank you. As the Mayor said last Thursday, Redlands lost a beautiful lady, Jenny Clapham. Many people knew Jenny and her family. Jenny was a local who attended Wellington Point Primary School and enjoyed growing up in Redlands with her family. Jenny often shared some of her wonderful childhood memories and the fun and mischief they also got up to running around the area on the farms. Jenny went on to become a teacher, was married, and she recently lost her husband of only 40 years, which deeply affected her. Jenny went on to Townsville, but her heart remained in Redlands and she soon returned with her husband to her beloved home area. Jenny had two children, Helen and Russell, and loved very dearly her four grandchildren and often would show with much pride her family photographs at functions. Jenny had an exceptionally strong Christian faith from her childhood and all throughout her life, and she was involved in the Christian family in Redlands. It was through her church work I first met her. What characteristics always stood out for me about Jenny was she was so accepting of everybody and only too willing to do anything she could for anybody. She was a respected elder at Trinity Uniting Church, but her Christian work covered not only that church, but all of Redlands and all denominations. She was absolutely involved in everything. Jenny was so supportive and heavily involved in the Redlands Easter Festival and the Redlands Ministers Fellowship, which the Mayor mentioned, but her main thing was that she brought people together. She was the organiser. Always wanting to record events, Jenny was always snapping away on her little camera, and we had a laugh at church on Sunday at the induction of Reverend Marion, the new minister at the church. "For goodness sake, is someone taking photos or Jenny will get cross with us," came out of the congregation. Jenny was incredibly compassionate and had a great humility, never wanting recognition for her own work, but always the first to pat others on their backs. There was always a smile and hug for everyone, no matter what was happening in her life or how tired she was due to her own community work or family commitments. She was there. These are good lessons for everyone to learn from Jenny's example. Jenny was a friend, a mentor, a leading light. Recently, Jenny was a driving force, an inspiration for having the cross on top of the church at Wellington Point repaired, so it once again shines out every night across our suburb. Her energy, love and grace will always be remembered and will also shine out throughout the years by those she touched. Our hearts and prayers go out to Jenny's very much loved family.
Thank you, Councillor Boglari. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Wendy. Beautiful words. Again, last Thursday when we received the email, it was pretty devastating to all of us, and the words were unpalatable to read. We were indeed numb, and Jenny was a personal friend of mine, as thousands in our city could say she was a personal friend. Our daughter got married in January this year, and one of the first text messages of the day was from Jenny, and naming my daughter by name, as you've just mentioned. It was just a beautiful message, really was. And I just think I would finish, because you have spoken so beautifully, that when we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining like the sun, she will be shining. Thank you.
Vale Jenny Clapham. Councillors, I haven't been advised of any other... Councillor Gleeson actually did, unless it's on that particular topic. Councillor Gleeson did advise me earlier this morning.
Thanks, Mayor. Tough to follow that one. Weekend before last, 9th of March, we ran the 5th Bayside Blues Festival. I've got to say it was a massive success, and today I want to just acknowledge the work of the Capella Bay Rotary Club, together with the assistance of some of the surrounding clubs. Cleveland, Wellington Point have all jumped in this year as well, and it was pretty lucky that they did. This year we're still waiting on official numbers to come in, the gate numbers to come in, but it looks like we may have almost doubled the patronage in previous years. I'm pretty confident we reached over 10,000 people. Now, it's a free community day that we've been putting on now. As I said, the fifth event. It's been marred in the last couple of years over bad weather, but this year was just a major success. And look, it was my little baby. I conceived the idea, and I've been a part of the management of it for the last five events. But I've got to say, this has become a really premier event in the Redlands for my mind. Council's contribution is not that much for an event that encourages 10,000 people to get out and about. Of those numbers, as I said, we haven't had confirmation of yet, but in previous years when we do the gate records, we take down postcodes. Generally speaking, 50% of the people that attend the Bayside Blues Festival are from outside of the Redlands. Of the 50% that do attend, 70% are generally from the northern part of the city and 30% from the southern, which is probably indicative of where the population is in the Redlands anyway. So for my mind, look, it's a fairly low budget event for council to assist with as a major sponsor. It ticks all the boxes: tourism, economic development. I've got to say, most of our food vendors actually sold out an hour before we closed. There was certainly a lot of dollars flying around, and it was a really successful event, something I'm really proud of. And with thanks to the Capella Bay Rotary Club.
Congratulations, Councillor Gleeson, and it was a great move joining with Capella Bay Rotary to make it happen, so congratulations. Councillor Bishop.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. I think it's worth noting that in the world that we're living in, news travels very quickly, and emotions in response to events do touch people. And I'd just like to refer to the achievement of the people of New Zealand who are going through the devastating consequences of a significant abhorrent act, and many citizens across every region in the connected social media world are dealing with the consequences of unthinkable decisions by individuals. It's been very heartening to see the police from that country working internationally, and also with the leader who did a press conference today at a school calling for all of the citizens of New Zealand and elsewhere, particularly for the sake of children, to come together and speak, to not permit words that are spoken in hate or to incite any kind of division. And I think, as you have spoken about, and many others, in a time where social media, and she spoke specifically about that today, It is an important time for us to work together toward the best that we can aspire to, and I think as leaders representing our city, just a recognition of achievement, as she has said, there's only so much that leaders can do, doing all that she can, but it's also up to all of the citizens. So just acknowledging they're going through a challenging time, and there are many people in our community who are also touched, and that there is a lot that we can do, and best that we do that together. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop, and I repeat that, as I did at our citizenship ceremony, where we, Councillor Hughes and Councillor Golay, joined me in welcoming 77 new Australians to the Redlands Coast community, is that we should be celebrating diversity and differences, and differences of opinion are good, but it should never evolve into bullying tactics. Respect people's different opinions, their different religions, and certainly the pledge not to sledge that this council embarked on was just one move that we as a united group agreed to do. And certainly it's not just about social media, but obviously social media allows it to travel the world very quickly. So certainly on behalf of the Redlands Coast community, once again, as I did on Monday night, we consider and we pray for the families who have been impacted by this horrible act of violence so close to home. And yes, leadership is required, but it's required by every single individual that forms part of a society. So thank you, Councillor Bishop, for raising that today, and I'm sure I speak on behalf of all of the community as we keep them our prayers. Okay, councillors. Item 6 is receipt and confirmation of minutes. May I have a mover and seconder, please, that the minutes of a general meeting held on the 6th of March be confirmed. Move, Councillor Hughes. Seconded, Councillor Golay. Any items of correctness? Okay, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Carried unanimously. Hand over to Chief Executive Officer to present any matters that are outstanding from our previous general meetings. CEO.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. This report on the regional approach to waste and resource management will come forward at the end of the year.
Thank you, CEO. Okay, our next item is item 8, public participation. In accordance with section 31 of our policy 3127 council meeting standing orders, a period of 15 minutes may be made available by resolution to permit members of the public to address the local government on matters of public interest that pertains to local government. So priority is given to members of the public who have made a written application to do so. Now, I do have a written application before me, but I will need a mover and seconder that the meeting adjourn for a 15-minute period to allow the public participation segment to continue, and that the member from the public can address us on matters that are pertaining to local government. Move, Councillor Edwards. Seconded, Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Okay, Councillor Edwards, you're missing a sign. I know who he is, that's right. Someone's stolen your sign, Councillor Edwards. Watch out. Is it? It's all good. Oh. Just before I invite Robin Harris up to address us, I just wanted to acknowledge Michael in our gallery. Can everyone see Michael down there at the back? Hey, Michael. Michael joined us early to sit in one of our seats to see how exciting it is to participate in local government, and it's great to have you here this morning, Michael. Can everyone give Michael a big round of applause for making time to be here? Michael, you are absolutely welcome here anytime, and we're looking forward to you participating and telling these councillors how to better behave. So, thank you. Thank you, Michael. Okay, sorry, Mr. Harris, to digress a little bit there, but I couldn't see Michael behind Councillor Hughes, and Councillor Boglary did remind me. Look, you may have noticed the signage in the chambers regarding public participation. It is Council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name, suburb, organisation that they represent and the subject that they wish to speak about. Just a reminder that this information is recorded in the minutes of the meeting, which is a public document available for inspection at Council's Administration Building and, of course, published on our website. Just to remind you that the meeting is being recorded in audio video and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be placed in the public domain. Now, I know, Mr Harris, that you do know the drill, but just quickly, so that I've covered off on all my notes here, any person addressing the meeting will state their name and suburb, organisation they represent, the subject they wish to speak about. You need to stand unless you're unable to do so. Act and speak with decorum. Be respectful and courteous. Make no comments directed at any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that comments relate to council as a whole. My responsibility will be to consider each application on its merits. Give priority to members of the public who have made written application to the CEO to address the meeting and determine the maximum number of speakers and the amount of time that they speak for. My responsibility also allows me to withdraw the approval to address council before the time period has elapsed. Debate and discussion cannot be entered into at this time. So with that, Mr Harris, if you'd like to start with your name, suburb and or organisation that you represent.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Councillors, Robin Harris from Maclay Island, and listening to you recite that little diatribe once again, my mind wandered and I just wondered if my flies were done up. It's amazing where the mind goes from time to time. Now, yes, I'm just hoping. I came over to the mainland this morning, unusually enough, on the barge. It cost me $100, and I'm here today to speak on my own behalf, nobody else's, but I think I probably reflect the views of a number of islanders. It cost me $100 this morning to come across on the barge with my car from the island. And I shall be going back this afternoon with a whole heap of shopping and all sorts of other garbage. I also have a car in the compound, the council compound at Wynnal Creek. That car gets used rarely, maybe once every 3 weeks, maybe once a fortnight, maybe once a month. We went to Europe last year. It spent 5 months in the compound doing nothing whatsoever. But it is a convenience that I value because it means that I can get from the ferry to wherever I want easily, to buy what I want, to do what I want, to go to the hospital, whatever. The core of what I'm saying is that I live on one of the biggest retirement villages in the Redlands, and that is the Simbi Islands. It is a big retirement village, as we all know. Most of those retired people, I guess, would be like me. Many of them have cars on the mainland. Many of them would be very, very happy not to have a car on the mainland with all the associated expense, but just to pay a more modest fee to get their island car to the mainland as and when they need. This council has done a number of things over the years. I was a member of what was called the SimbiCAC. It must be nearly 10 years ago that we were allowed to make a contribution towards the planning for the Redlands and more particularly the islands. And a number of things came up out of the Integrated Local Transport Plan. These were things like on-island public transport, passenger ferry pricing, car barge transport pricing and efficiency, on-island parking and mainland parking. I would say, even though there might be fringes of dissent about the way the job on Maclay Island has been done for the jetty area, to my mind, that is a wonderful piece of work. It has cleaned up that jetty area no end. It really makes our front door great. So congratulations on that. We look forward to seeing the published designs of the new jetties to make sure that they actually give people who are exported off the island by ambulance some dignity, and that they will actually cope with the future increases in population and the passenger numbers that are going to increase. And the current design, or the designs that we saw earlier on, are of some concern because they don't seem to meet those standards. Symbi Island population will, as I'm sure most of you know, blow out to something like 24,000 when all the blocks are built, which inevitably they will. That can be an increase in population of between 3 and 4 times. I don't think anybody's tied down the actual population of the islands. The last census was about 6,500, I believe. If we said it's 8,000, that means the population is going to treble in a relatively short time. Parking on the mainland is how many? Who can guess? 1,500, 1,600 people, cars. Going pro rata, that means our parking could treble. 4,500 cars. Totally unsustainable, totally outside what council is planning with its 2,500 car park. There is no doubt in my mind that that car park must be provided. It is absolutely essential, particularly for the 30-40% of people who come across to work on the mainland, so that they can access their work and so that the islands can prosper. But along with that, there needs to be much thought about how to ameliorate those figures. The only way I can see, whilst it's possible for the ferry company to tinker with routes to make marginal changes and marginal economies, perhaps, if they're so inclined, those sort of economies won't meet the things that are needed for our islands. They might get more efficient barges. Will that cost saving be passed on to the users? Who knows? The Symbi 2030 planning and the Symbi ILTP, the Integrated Transport Plan of 2011, in which the Symbi CAC committee had the ability to give opinions, came out with a list. The implementation plan includes infrastructure tasks, provision of parking at Wynnum Creek, sealing of island roads. Island road sealing has done well. It's not complete yet, but it's done very well. Parking at Wynnum Creek is still a disaster on the ground. It must be upgraded, and some way must be found to make it palatable, or more palatable, or less unpalatable to the local residents. Upgrading the island ferry terminals, that's an ongoing thing. Investigative tasks included in the council's implementation plan involve the development of a Symbi strategic marine transport plan. Investigate options for alternative barge services, including routes, subsidies, social, economic, environmental, and other initiatives. You'll remember that the 2011 alternative route study actually recommended the investigation of 2 potential new routes, replacement routes for the 24 odd kilometre current route, and much shorter routes, and therefore more economical.
Mr. Harris, I'll just advise you that we're at the 5-minute mark, but continue and maybe try to wrap up if you can.
Thank you. That is the only alternative in my mind to reduce a parking crisis that will eventuate in the Redlands is to encourage a way, whether it's alternative barge routes or subsidies, which in my mind won't work, they're unsustainable, but some way of making car barges cheaper. This council has the plan. It's been a plan since 2011. It hasn't managed to get it off the ground. Part of that is because the three levels of government aren't working together. One level of government is always giving excuses or waiting for the other level of government. This is the only chamber which can actually get that started. So please, on behalf of the islanders and the future economic and social progress of the islands, please get stuck into future planning, as in the existing plan, and transfer that, if necessary, to the new Redlands ILTP. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Haven't been advised of any other speakers, so we'll go straight to petitions and presentations. We need to move it that we our meeting proceedings are resumed. Moved to Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Against? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Petitions and presentations. I haven't been advised of any, councillors. We'll go straight to order of business. Now, councillors, I do need a motion to withdraw an item from the agenda. Can I please have a mover and seconder? And we'll just get that up on the screen just so councillors are clear. That item 19.3, Barrow Group versus Redland City Council P&E appeal be withdrawn from the agenda, as orders made from the Planning Environment Court require that by 15th of March the appellant shall make an application for amendments to the conditions of the development approval. Council has not yet received that copy of the amendment application, so is therefore unable to update councillors on its content at this time. Therefore, the item will be placed on the next available general meeting. So if I have a mover and seconder, move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Gleeson. I don't think there's any discussion required. I'll put the motion. Councillors, for, against? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Okay, councillors, into the items in our agenda. Item 12.1 is our February 2019 monthly financial reports. Have I got a mover and seconder for that? Thank you. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards? Briefing. Deborah, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you as Chair, thank you, councillors, for the opportunity. Today we see tabled the February financial report, so this is the 8th month of the financial year. Points to note that councillors may be aware of. We know we've started our deliberations for Budget 1920, which always turns our mind to what will be delivered in the current financial year. So as part of our deliberations for 1920, through the executive leadership team, the officers look at the capital carryovers. So we're looking at those, and those will be jobs of timing in nature if they need to carry forward into next year. So we may see some movement in the capital program as per previous years. We're also considering a final budget review. So we're looking at our position at the end of February to consider any material movements, and the ELT will review that to see if it is significant enough to table with council, and if so, we'll see that coming forward. We note that there's 10 out of the 11 key performance indicators met at the end of February because rates were due for payment, so that helps with a lot of the KPIs, and the cash balances are sitting at $160 million at the end of the month. Happy to take any questions, Madam Mayor.
Any questions? Being none, I'll put the motion, unless you want to sum up, Councillor. Those in favour? Against? That's carried unanimously. Thank you, Councillor, and thank you, Deborah. Item 12.2 is an obsolete policy, pensioner general rate deferral policy. Mover and seconder, thanks. Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded. Councillor Golay, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
Just very briefly, it's an obsolete policy. It would have been well intended at the time. It's only been regarding some a general rate deferrals for people in financial difficulty. It's only been used once, and it's actually been in that whole time. It's also been identified that could actually be detrimental to the financial well-being of the individual. So it's looking to be repealed.
Thank you. Speaker against? No, just comments or questions? Councillor Waglari?
I just wondered on page 24 under people that there is no change to the pensioner ratepayer access to hardship relief. Yeah, so there's no detriment to our actual community by this policy being deleted. I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
So this policy has been in existence since 2004. That's when Adam was a boy and I was first elected, and it's been used once. So it just indicates the value of that policy to the community. So, Councillor Tolte?
Sorry to throw a question without notice, Madam Mayor, but while reading this, I had to question the 11% interest rate on deferrals.
That's legislated.
Okay, so I was hoping that we could have an explanation. So that's the explanation, because
yes,
that seems extreme when we've got
that's based on our financial regulations under the Local Government Act, as I understand it. So we don't have a choice.
Perhaps we could take that offline and write to the state government later about that, because that's really not in keeping with the current CPI, et cetera.
It's been like that, I think, once again, since Adam was a boy and I was elected. Deb, do you want to just explain a little further?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think you've covered it off between you. So the Local Government Act and supporting regulation provides council with an opportunity to charge interest on overdue rates. The maximum is 11%. We often benchmark with other councils, and most councils are setting at 11%. So it's industry norm. It's an industry practice.
Okay, so that's a maximum. We're not legislated to apply 11%. Okay, perhaps we could take that offline and discuss that later. Thank you.
A couple of the hands are up. Councillor Bishop?
Just briefly acknowledging that if there's a policy that we don't need, given how many policies we have, it's good to take it away. And given the consensus view that it's not performing its role, it's a welcome thing. And I think a lot of people call for every time there's a new law, there should be one taken away. It doesn't quite happen like that, but this is an attempt to try and make sure we focus on what matters.
Any other comments? Okay, if not, I'll hand back to Councillor Mitchell.
I'm happy with that discussion. Thank you, everyone. I'm happy to move the motion.
Motion's moved and seconded. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? That's carried. Thank you, councillors. Next item is corporate policy, discount and waivers of fees and infringement policies. Mover and seconder for that. Thanks. Move, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor Hughes. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
No, I think the report's self-explanatory. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? It's carried unanimously. 12.4 is the amended local lawmaking process incorporating new community engagement process. Mover and seconder, thanks. Move, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor Hughes. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
No, again, it's just updating our local law process, making sure that community engagement is in it, and that's what we need to stress in all our policy making and everything. So again, it's self-explanatory.
Thanks, Councillor Boglari. Any other questions or comments, Councillor Bishop, and then Councillor Tolte?
Yeah, just given that this does relate to community engagement, if there is feedback from the residents as they see this and have any concerns, please do keep us informed so that we can make sure that we're apprised of the issues that need to be addressed, and if there's any concerns, to let us know. So if there's anything that we miss at this point, the intent is to try and make sure that all that needs to be done and can be done is being done. So if there's anything else that needs to be brought to our attention subsequent to today, please let us know.
Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question and then some comments, if I may. I did send through a question to the officers. I'm sorry if they've answered and I didn't see the email yesterday. On page 3 of the local law, page 38 of our report, step 6 says that a submission is properly made to the local government if it is written by any person, and I'm obviously paraphrasing, and they state their position to the local law, the reasons that they relied on in support of that position, and is received by the local government before the last day of the consultation period, and includes the name and address of the person making submission. I would like to know if it is only considered to be a properly made submission if all of those requirements, because they do have an end at each point, are included, because I don't know that every submission is going to include all of those things. One of the things we were trying to address was the multiple submissions from individuals and submissions and anonymous submissions that were coming in from all over the world with various things. We wanted to know, A, were the submissions from residents and how were they affected, and B, were they multiple submissions so that they needed to have a name and address on them. So I do certainly agree that we need those things, but I would like to know if all of those points have to be satisfied for a properly made submission firstly, please.
Well, my understanding of the law is when there's an and, it does require it. If it's an or, then it doesn't. So that's my understanding, my bush lawyer understanding. I'm getting a nod from legal counsel. There is something I've learned along the way from you, Andrew. Thank you.
That means that a person can't simply write and say they don't agree with a position or they don't support a position. They must justify that lack of support for the position by having the reasons relied upon in support of that position. Now, I think if someone puts a name and address and is a resident and writes to us, we need to have a more detailed way of assessing those responses, and certainly of noting where the response doesn't give a reason. But I don't think that a person who fails to provide that or the objective way that can be assessed should have their submission dismissed. So I think that there's probably some more work to be done in that space. I'm also concerned that essentially this work was sparked by concerns about how we were carrying out the assessment of submissions and the receiving of submissions. And to my mind, this is a Clayton's policy. What we've done is take that out. We've said, well, we won't say, you know, we're going to remove the existing community consultation steps and replace them with provision to provide a unique set of steps for every time we want to go to consultation. That's my understanding of the document that we've read. So what we've done, in fact, is just put that concern out to the future and not answered it at all in this policy. So I'm somewhat disappointed in that. I certainly want to see the document that shows that we are going to have a tighter assessment, we are going to have better guidelines for assessing submissions and provision of the information as it's assessed, as it comes in from those submissions. None of that is... Those were the concerns that we had when we started this process, and what we've actually done is not answer that. So that is my comment. Thank you.
I'll get an officer to respond. John?
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. Through you, Madam Mayor. My understanding is that this report is really just as a result of some questions that were raised through the consultation process for various local laws, and the real... Only the major change, and I've got the experts at the back if we need to go into the detail, but is really saying we're going to have an individual plan for each local law and council's going to determine that. So sometimes just putting an ad in the paper might suffice. Sometimes we need pop-ups. Sometimes we need to be in a park. But we're going to actually do a plan every time we need the consultation and tailor that depending on the changes and the views in the chamber. I think, and Andrew's over there, I think that these steps are just straight out of the legislation. So where it's talking about properly made submission, I think that we're just parroting what is in the law. So that's not us that's come up with that. That's a legal requirement for every local council. Is that right, guys? Christine, Andrew, do you know if that's...
I'm just trying to double check the legislation now. I think these provisions are the same as they've always been. They look very familiar. I mean, a submission should be saying your name, your contact details, your reasons for your submission. So these seem pretty consistent to what I've seen in the past. I just can't see exactly at the present time what subsection they refer to under the law, that's all.
This is really just about giving us the power to do individual consultation plans for local laws. That's all this report is about. We may need to do more work based on questions from council, that's fine, but they're not related to this particular report.
All that we had that discussion because our local laws go from everything, you know, go to parking through to the most obscure things to help us do our business. So that was a discussion that we would, each local law amendment or change would allow us to determine how broad and far we consult. So that would be, as when we have a report come to council, and correct me if I'm wrong here, John, will come to us that we're proposing to change a law, and attached to that will be the type of consultation that is required so that council can actually make the determination as to how far and broad you want to go with consultation, whether it just be an ad in the paper or whether it be, you know, letters written to every ratepayer or whatever it might be. So that's how my understanding. I'm just making sure I'm getting the nod.
You're 100% right. We're just so, formalising, rather than just roll out the vanilla, we're saying, well, no, we're going to do it in a more...
Which is what council's discussion was about, you know, trying to deal with some of the issues of the past.
And I can see that that is an improvement, so I won't be voting against this motion today. However, the quite woeful assessment of submissions in the past is what caused my concern, and I believe that that concern and my agitating around that is what's caused this review. I still don't have an answer to how that's going to be improved in the future. So I'll look forward to that.
Your answer will rely on that local law, whichever one it may be, coming to council and having the discussion at the time to make sure the assessment and the consultation meets the requirements of this council. I think that's where the fine detail will be.
I asked some very specific questions around that and they haven't yet been answered, but okay, that's fine for
today.
That's
my understanding. Again, I'm looking for agreement from someone that's been writing the report. So, yes, yep. Councillor Bishop.
Yeah, I think what's important to remember is that consultation is a broad category of ways for an authority to consult with a community. When it comes to making a local law, you would want to make sure that what is necessary in order to make sure that a person who's making a submission has done it properly. And so I think these steps are critical, Councillor Tulti, so that we do get exactly the data that helps us to make a law based on properly made submissions. That's not to say that if someone does put information forward that doesn't have all of these details, that officers don't take it into account and that councillors can't consider it. It's what it says in specific relation to a properly made submission, but when officers bring information to us, I suppose you'll have noticed that in the past they say there are this many properly made submissions and there are other submissions that were put in but that were not properly made that were generally looking at X, Y and Z type category. And they are useful bits of information, but they're not properly made. When we're not talking about flying kites, we're talking about making a law. So I think these things are important. So.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other comments? Councillor Mitchell.
Yeah, thanks, Vin. We'll need to monitor this quite carefully. It's great that we can have some flexibility for some bespoke consultation, but that will also, I'm sure we'll always... meet the minimum requirements under the legislation, and this council will be always proud to do that. But because as soon as you open up the opportunity for tailoring or making some bespoke consultation, you're also opening yourself up to criticism if one time we do something and other times we don't. So we're going to just need to monitor that. There will be a couple of mistakes made, but it's wonderful that we've got some flexibility.
Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a quick observation. As a governance body, we have to operate within a legal framework. This sets that legal framework. I agree. You can't just lodge something just because. There has to be some proper governance and reasoning around that. I think that's what's being tabled here. And it takes away that perception from the general public that there's just this sort of pie-in-the-sky approach to drafting laws and doing submissions and consultation. There's a proper structured legal way of doing it. Thank you.
No further comments? Put the motion... I'll hand back to the mover. Councillor Boglari.
Thank you. I was just going to say on the bottom of page 33, Council can be confident that legislative requirements are being adhered to. This process provides a framework for ethical and transparent practice and ensures consistency with state legislation guidelines and promotes a well-informed community, and I think that is what we are aiming for. So with that,
put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Oops. Item 13.1, these are our delegated decisions, councillors. First one is delegated authority category 1, 2 and 3. A mover and second of those. Move, Councillor Mitchell. Second of Councillor Boglari. Councillor Mitchell?
All there in the report, thank you.
No comments. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Carried unanimously. Item 13.2, similarly delegated. Oh, so matters that are, it's for noting, matters from the Planning Environment Court. Mover and second, I move Councillor Elliott, second to Councillor Edwards. Any discussion? Being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Carried. Item 13.3, we'll need a mover and second for this. Move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Tolte. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
thank you, Mayor. Yes, I would, in moving item 13.3, the property 195 to 199 Delancey Street, Ormiston, has asked for a request for the koala habitat value to be changed from medium value bushland habitat to rehabilitation habitat. Thank you.
Any speakers against? No speakers against? Any questions? Councillor Boglari, you have a question?
Can I just ask officers, by having this change, what that might alter in development, future development assessments?
Okay. So my understanding is, just to be clear while they're walking in, that now this is just a designation. This is not necessary. This is not a subdivision as such. The application will have to be... Chris, you can come walk right on down. Thanks. Show off your new haircut. Well done fundraising. We just got a question, Chris, as you're walking up here, on what impact this would have on any future applications. Look, I think for those who saw Chris 2 weeks ago, will notice a significant change in his follicle matter on his head. It's fair to say that it was a choice of his to raise money for leukemia and get a cheap haircut. So, but look, and I'll mention the whole team. You'll see his boss down the back there has also participated in assisting those impacted by leukemia. So congratulations and thank you. And I'm sure you'll endure all the comments that you get over the next few weeks.
And the guys
with
raised
great
over $3,000.
Yeah, over $3,000 is significant.
Significant, absolutely.
There you go. So well done, team. Anyway, back to work. So the question from Councillor Boglari is in relation to the item 13.3 in the koala habitat value report. Just the question is regarding how will this impact any future applications?
Through the chair. So the application lodged with council is a subdivision application for a 1-into-2 lot subdivision. As part of that, they've lodged a request to reclassify the koala habitat on the site. That can only be done as part of a development application, so that's why it forms part of that application. The request involves proposal to reclassify from bushland habitat to rehabilitation habitat. The assessment criteria are slightly different between those two classifications for the subsequent subdivision application. Under the bushland habitat designation or classification, the criteria of relevance states that no non-juvenile koala habitat trees can be removed. That's the matter that would be assessed as part of any application. For the rehabilitation habitat, the criteria is that no non-juvenile koala habitat trees can be unavoidably cleared. So they need to demonstrate that any clearing is unavoidable. They need to demonstrate that any clearing is unavoidable. As part of a subdivision application, we consider, and as part of any proposal to clear vegetation, we consider what is the designation of the site, the zone of the site. The site itself is within the environmental management zone, which the planning scheme doesn't intend to be further fragmented. So it identifies basically this shouldn't be further subdivided. It's as small a lot as is intended by the planning scheme to protect environmental values of the site. And so looking at whether whether any clearing of the site would be unavoidable, we'd consider that intent. So it'd be unlikely that the reclassification would have any change on the assessment of that reconfiguring a lot application in terms of the loss of koala habitat trees.
So if we left that as it is, they could still subdivide it into those larger lots which are in that area. All it would mean is that when they go to put their house in, they'd have to come to council, which I think they would anyway, and we would just be able to talk to them about the trees on the area. We wouldn't be preventing them from actually doing anything, would we?
Through the chair, the subdivision application is still to be assessed, so whether that gets approved or not is still subject to assessment. In terms of the reclassification, whether it's bushland or rehab, as I said, I think the assessment of whether a non-juvenile koala habitat tree can be removed is basically the same.
Councillor Edwards.
Yes. This specifically relates to changing the designation, and and that's where I want to focus on, that the report actually demonstrates on the ground that it justifies the officer's recommendation is that it should be the classification changed because that reflects what's on the ground. So if that is the case, to me, outside factors don't come into account. That's all I'm interested in is what's found on the ground is correct with the recommendation of the officer. So that's fine.
So we should be acknowledging the criteria set and making our judgment based on the criteria, not any other future considerations. That's what you're saying. Any other comments? Councillor Bishop and then Councillor Hewlett.
Yes, if I may, through the chair, ask the officer, in relation to the trees that are there offsets for, if there is a request for removal of trees, is there an offset fee per tree? And what's that process?
Through the chair, if it remains within the bushland habitat, there's no ability to offset non-juvenile koala habitat trees within that designation. The offset arrangement only comes into effect when an applicant has first demonstrated that they've avoided removing any non-juvenile koala habitat tree, then minimised the impact, mitigated the impact, and then the final step is offset. So I don't believe offsetting would be applicable in this case because it's unlikely that they'd be able to demonstrate that they have avoided the clearing of non-juvenile koala habitat trees. So it's only once you've gone through that process that offsets are applicable.
I think we really do need to bring ourselves back to what we're deciding today. There's no request to remove a tree or anything like that at this point in time. It's very easy for us to get caught up in something that may not happen. So if I could just bring your attention back to the agenda. I have left a bit of latitude. I haven't asked for the speakers for and against. But just to be clear, we're making a decision on a designation, not on an application, not on a removal of a tree. And that judgment's being made against criteria that's been set out by the state, as I understand it. So, Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I guess my issue with this is that we've just finished the city plan, and I would have assumed we would have ground-truthed a lot of these areas. My concern is the acceptable outcome for that zoning says you can't fragment less than 20 hectares, is that correct, or 10 hectares?
We're not making that decision today.
No, I'm just asking a question, Madam Mayor.
But thank you.
Can I finish?
No.
Can I finish?
No, not yet.
So,
Councillor, just 1 minute, please. I am asking you to debate the issue in front of you. You cannot anticipate an application.
We have an application in council.
And we're not debating that today.
But I need to know more information about
that. Well, the explanation was made about the zoning.
I'm going to talk, just say it and I'll close down. Thank you.
Councillor? No, I'm asking you to abide by standing orders, thank you, Deputy Mayor.
and the Deputy Mayor would understand the standing orders ask us to talk to the topic in front of us. Thank you. Councillor, if you don't like the standing orders, then I would suggest that you change the standing orders. You were not asking it about the item in front of us, and I had just... It's enough. I'm just explaining to you, Councillor, that I'm trying to make sure this debate deals with the item in front of us. Well, that's your call, Councillor. If that's how you want to make decisions in chambers, I'll let the people make a judgment on that. Thank you. Councillors, another question, Councillor Golay?
Thanks.
And I am going to advise you to... This is about the reclassification. Thank you, Councillors.
Yeah. So just if I through you, Madam Chair, to Chris, just in a layman's perspective, could you just tell me again why it's being reclassified? Is it because there's a lot of open ground? Is it because there's not... Do you know what I mean? I'm just trying to get my head around why it actually would go from a medium value to a rehabilitation classification. Thank you.
Through the chair. I don't have the page numbers with me, sorry. I think it's the fifth page within item 13.3 contains the definitions of bushland habitat and the definition of rehabilitation habitat. So the request before council, page 61 and 62. The request before council is to consider whether the classification of the vegetation on that site better reflects the definition of bushland habitat or the definition of rehabilitation habitat. That's in a nutshell the decision that council's making today. I guess a couple of key points distinguishing those two definitions. One is about the site area. So bushland habitat is defined as land that is 2 hectares or more, or if less than 2 hectares is within 50 metres of bushland habitat. It also identifies that it consists mainly of forested areas, closed canopy forests, so canopy touching each other, that sort of nature of vegetation on the site. Conversely, rehabilitation habitat is where the lot is of half a hectare or more and contains native vegetation that includes some forested areas, scattered trees, areas of grass and bare surfaces. So in officers' opinion, the site better represents the rehabilitation habitat. It's a scattering of trees that is intermixed with grass areas and bare surfaces as opposed to a closed canopy forest.
Any other questions, councillors? Can I just also correct, ground truthing doesn't normally happen in the planning scheme process at all. It is a very high level overlay, and whether it's rehabilitation or whether it's our own zonings, the ground truthing actually happens when people apply and provide their consultants' reports to us. That's when ground truthing occurs. So I just wanted to make that clear, because it might confuse people in the community that we go out there and we plot every tree when we do a planning scheme. That doesn't happen. So just to be clear. Okay, handing back to Councillor Hughes to sum up.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'll hold my. I think it's been said, and I appreciate, Chris, that you've very clearly shared with us that distinction between the two values. I've been on site to this property a couple of times, speaking with the owners. It is their intent to stay on the property. They are not looking to move. They are looking to do a small subdivision at the front of that property. There will be two trees to be discussed later. However, this here is that the officer's recommendation, I'm happy to move that council resolves to approve the reclassification of the area identified as medium value bushland habitat to medium value rehabilitation habitat under Schedule 11, Part 4 of the Planning Regulation 2017. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Hughes. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Okay, motion's carried. Those in favour? Councillor Mitchell, Golay, Edwards, Hughes, Tolte, Gleeson, Williams. Those against? Boglari, Hewlett, Elliott and Bishop. Thank you, councillors. All right, moving on. Councillors, there is a mayoral minute, as you'd be aware, has been distributed to you. Just in regards to the LGAQ delegation for the 2nd of April, which is not today. And it's not tomorrow.
Excuse me, Mayor.
Thank you.
I thought that was being handed out to us, that mayoral minute.
It was distributed. It was emailed, I think. Councillors, this probably doesn't require a great deal of discussion. It really just is delegating the councillors who are able to attend on the 2nd of April and also the voting delegate as myself. And obviously this is to represent our concerns into local government election reform being bulldozed through to legislation without consultation, and councillors will know that Councillor Hewlett on my behalf tabled a motion asking for community who will be impacted by how they vote and how those votes are counted and a whole heap of other issues that we're yet to even discover. So in support of local government across the state, we will be attending the extraordinary meeting on the 2nd of April to let the state government know that we are disappointed that their commitment for collaboration has not been met when dealing with a very important piece of legislation that impacts community and how people are elected, how those votes are actually counted, things such as compulsory, mandatory preferential voting, and a whole heap of other things. So the mayoral minute is really just to allow us to go and do such. Councillor Boglari?
You just stated the reasons why we're going to the meeting. They were different to mine. I'm actually going in there because I thought we were having a chance to consult and talk about which ones we liked and which ones we didn't. That was
I'm
all.
Talking about state government. We're not. Talking about local government association has put forward a number of motions.
Yep.
To present
it,
to the.
It is all about consulting. That's all. I just thought that's what this is. I know, but what the state government has done is given us basically an entree, and we are saying what we like about the entree. I mean, the bill hasn't come yet. When the bill comes out, we got informed the other night there was going to be consultation. So, I mean, the LGAQ has to acknowledge that it's a bit premature to be carrying on about lack of consultation. That's all. Excuse me, Councillor Gleeson,
just state the timeline, councillors. There is very little time for decent consultation to occur. Whatever the state members may have told you, the bill will be tabled in the first part of April, and it will. I have been told, I've heard it from the minister's mouth, it will be legislation in May. So what we know, what we know that is coming through, has been the LGAQ has put forward a number of motions to put the LGAQ's position. So we will be there as a member of the LGAQ and we'll be voting on those issues. There's still a raft of issues, changes as I understand that we haven't seen and hasn't been formally put there. So that's for another day. But I'm just saying there isn't actually a lot of consultation, and it's not about our consultation. It's about the community understanding what's going to happen at the end of March next year when they go to the polling booths and realise that the whole system has changed. So that requires a fair bit of education. I think we're saying the same thing, Councillor Boglari. I'm not sure, but this is not Redden City Council working independently. This is as part of the 77 councils of Queensland, letting the state government know that there are certain things that they've currently put out there, that the few of them they've put out there that we either agree or don't agree with. Yeah. So am I on the same page now? Cool. Yeah. Thank you. Councillor Bishop.
Appreciate the fact that the LGAQ are calling councils and the representatives of the councils to come together to get a consensus view on particularly certain elements, and there are six that have proposed. Those motions that have been proposed, I think it's important that we come to... I think it's... There was 10.
there are a number of motions that have been proposed, and I think it's important that we come together to gain a consensus. What I think is important to acknowledge is that the state government, as the authority who is in charge of determining the laws across the entire state, obviously those laws do relate to councils, and some of the motions and proposals that are put forward, I believe, are absolutely critical, and they come straight out of both the Belcarra report or the Sawley report, and they are steadfastly recommended by high-level thinking people who want to restore faith in democracy. So I think us coming together on this day at the local government assembly allows us to get some consensus. My concern is that if the LGAQ comes out with a strident approach vehemently opposing or apparently opposing the state government, if the LGAQ proposes before we meet to come out with a strident rebuttal against the state government, I think that can foul the air, and I think citizens really want clarity about certain elements that make sure the robust democratic processes that can be in place are in place. And I think it's important that we go along to debate the contestable issues and ask some further questions about how consultation will be done. So my support there, with a clarification that we want to avoid the political fallout of oppositional approaches with a broad brushstroke. Thanks.
Just to be clear, not all of the reforms being proposed are recommended by Belcarra or the Sawley report. Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll try and contain my outrage. We work within a legal framework, and I realise that. But, you know, points have been raised about democratic process, et cetera, et cetera. The cold, hard reality is that councils operate under the legal framework as designated by the state government. That's it. Whether it's our planning, whether it's applications made, whatever. This whole perception that's been put across, and the fact that six individuals did the wrong thing and were caught,
Councillor Golay, that's enough, thank you. You're not actually talking to the motion now. This is really just appointing people to go along to the meeting. As said, I gave an explanation as why we were going. It's been elaborated in different ways, but now I'm just going to put the motion. Councillors, those in favour? Against? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. I've not been advised of notice of motion to repeal or amend. I have been advised of an item of urgent business, but in order to determine that urgency, we'll need to move into confidential session, which we will have to move into anyway, councillors. So if I can please be indulged by a mover and seconder to move into confidential. Moved, Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. And if I could just thank the press and the members of the public for their attendance this morning. On to just quickly, we'll have to receive an urgent business of urgent business from Councillor Boglari. Move, Councillor Boglari, that we receive urgent business. Seconded, Councillor Hughes. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. The next item we'll deal with quickly, telecommunications facilities lease. Can I just get a move? Oh, well, it's still. I've just got it in order as I discussed it before. It's there. All right. So councillors, item 19.1, mover and seconder for that. Thanks. Move, Councillor Elliott. Seconded, Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 9, Cleveland Land Purchase 19.2, mover and seconder. Move, Councillor Mitchell. Seconded, Councillor Golay. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop. Thank you, councillors. So that's that item. Next item will be the urgent item that Councillor Boglari has put forward. Mover. Moved, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor Hughes. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Elliott, Tolte, and Gleeson, and Edwards. Thank you. Thank you, Councillors.
Madam Mayor, there was another item that was brought.
Councillor, you've already determined you've had time, Councillor. It's
but
not
there
an
was
urgent
a
item.
Urgent notice of motion, notice without notice.
You've been advised, Councillor, there isn't. I close the meeting at 11:26. Thank you, Councillors.